It's my pleasure to welcome you here to the Clark Howard Show. You know, our mission is to serve you with advice and information that empowers you so you make better financial decisions in your life. Did you receive our newsletter today? I hope you did, because if you're not on the list, it's so easy to subscribe to our free newsletters that are priceless at clark.com/newsletters. In this episode, I have something for you to do, an assignment for you to do before you go to any doctor's appointment. I can't believe what I'm going to tell you you need to do. And also, I've always said that the way you treat your employees will ultimately directly impact the health of your business and how happy you make your customers. I've got some stories that absolutely prove my point. So there's a war going on right now behind the scenes where you and I are pawns in a big game of three-dimensional chess. And this three-dimensional chess involves true proof that you and I, when we seek healthcare, are not the customer. So what's happening is there's these knockdown, drag-out fights between medical practices, hospitals, labs, you name it, between the providers and the insurers. These fights are becoming so ugly that it used to be that each year you might have to make sure that your doctor was included or the hospital that you use was included or whatever it is was included in your health plan. And that would be a once a year thing, as there'd be annual ups and downs on what was included in your plan and who was included in your plan. But what's happened of late is the wars have become 12-month wars, continuous wars between the providers and the insurers. So you could have seen your doctor in January, have another appointment in April, and between January and April, the doctor that was in your insurance plan no longer is in your insurance plan. And you go to see the doctor in April, and instead of being treated in-network, suddenly you're out-of-network. And then you end up with a big bill. Think about when you and I go to a doctor's office. What do they ask at the front desk? Has there been any change in your insurance? Now you need to ask that question back, either by calling before you go, or when you show up for that appointment, you want to know, are you still included in my insurance? Because if they're not, as you know, with so many health plans, there's a big difference in what's covered and what's paid by insurance in-network versus out-of-network. This thing going on, as best I've been able to determine, has no coverage under the No Surprises Act, which we've had several questions related to of late. No Surprises really has to do with when care is rendered in a in-network facility, but somebody sees you you don't even know about, when you may not even be conscious, who's out of network, and you get some kind of eye-popping bill, you're not legally responsible for paying that amount of money because they were out of network. That's one of the elements of No Surprises. That does not apply when you're going to a facility, and because last time you went, it was in network, this time it may not be, you're out of network now because you voluntarily went there. And so every time you're with a provider or a facility, you have to re-verify and hope they know what they're talking about, that you are in network. Why we have to do all this is because we're irrelevant to the process. Nobody really looks at us as a customer. And because they don't, the burden falls to us to make sure that we are, in fact, in network, because the stakes and dollars can be so big between in and out.
All right, we'll go to questions. Justin in Georgia wrote, my wife and I are both on high deductible health savings accounts as it is the most economical option. We contribute about $8,000 a year to an HSA as we qualify for the family contribution limit. Soon we will be adopting two siblings out of the foster care system. Even after adoption, they will be provided Medicaid from the state as former foster children. Will we still be eligible to contribute the family contribution limit to our HSA now that we will have family who are not on an HDHP? Also, thank you for all you do for foster children.
Well, no, thank you for what you're doing, because what you're doing is unreal. And if you're not aware, this will be our 34th year of Clark's Christmas Kids, where we collect donations for children in foster care so they can have gifts at Christmas. What you're doing is a much bigger gift, bringing these children into your life, adopting into your home. That is just
keeping siblings together.
That's incredible. Awesome. Incredible. So what happens with the HSA? So you already know this part, that if you have people under your roof that are Medicare or Medicaid, that they're not eligible to be part of the HSA plan. So what the two of you are going to look at moving forward is you're going to do the individual limits on the HSA. And with both of you participating in HSAs, you should be fine. You should be able to put aside, as I remember, pretty much an equivalent amount to what you're able to as two individuals is what the family contribution limit would be. So that's how you would deal with this. If only one of you were in an HSA, then that would affect your overall limit. But since both of you are, you should not have any meaningful difference in big dollars that you're eligible to put aside.
Andrea in Colorado says, I'm 42 and work for a small employer that doesn't offer a 401k plan. My income is also above the limits to contribute to a Roth IRA. How should I best save for retirement? Will the government ever offer a universal 401k program that isn't tied to your employer?
Oh, this is something that I remember when the second President Bush proposed something equivalent to this a generation ago. And I was so excited. We were doing radio then. I was so excited on the radio show that we were going to get away from this crazy employer-based thing we do in the United States, which is so dumb when you think about how many jobs people have over a lifetime, and instead having an individual equivalent of a 401k. So there is a loophole you qualify for, Andrea, but it still will limit you to the Roth contribution limits. Because your employer does not offer a 401k, you're eligible to do a Roth IRA, even though you exceed the income limits. But if you're making enough money to exceed the 401k contribution limits, I'd want you to do the Roth IRA. And by the way, confirm independently what I've said, just because I don't want you a year from now to say, Clark, you said I was eligible and I wasn't. Regardless, you would still be able to do the backdoor Roth, but you should be fine doing a Roth IRA because there's no employer offered plan, that then the income limits don't apply. But you should also consider opening an investment account to put money into and put it in something like a total stock market index fund or ETF or something like that, because the tax treatment, although you will have to pay tax in capital gains, it will give you the opportunity, tax favored, to put aside more money for your future, not necessarily for retirement, than you're eligible to do with the hard cap of $7,000 into a Roth IRA, because you do need to be, if you're earning enough money to not be eligible, you're still not going to be saving enough money for your future.
And don't we have information? I think we might have information on Clark.com about small business 401ks. Like recently, I think you talked about how there are new ways for small businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. So Andrea, this is something I've done a lot of work in, because we're a small company. And we offer a really good 401k to our employees. And the cost of small employers doing so, which your small employer you work for may not even be aware, mm-hmm. that this is something they can offer. And the real pitch on that is the owners benefit the most, typically, that it would be a real benefit to the owners of the small business to set up one of these low-cost 401ks. And we did address this on the podcast last year.
Tammy in Georgia says, I've recently noticed that when I call for a one-time problem-solve type of service, like a locksmith, exterminator, appliance repair, even though I try to identify and call a local company, the service doesn't come from a local company. Further, it appears to be the norm that they are making websites intended to look like I am contacting a local company. The reason it bothers me is I don't know who I'm getting the service from, and I have no idea who I'm talking to and if I can reach them after, especially if something goes wrong. These situations are usually personal, like fixing my washing machine in my home, cutting my son's bike lock off on his campus. I don't want to send some stranger from a phone call to help my son at night. I don't want such a low level of accountability for a repair person I bring into my home. Do you have any advice, research on this trend toward low accountability service providers?
This is a great question, and it's something that we've addressed before, is that Google has become a curse in this area. That these con artists have figured out how to set up referral businesses where they pretend they register all kinds of domain names that are so localized, they even look like they're in big cities, they're from a particular area of a big city. When you're searching for a plumber, HVAC, whatever it is, and they're all commission-based referral services. So you have no idea who you're actually going to have come. You don't know if they're crooks. You don't know who they are.
I've also encountered that there were businesses that were local. They've been bought by this bigger chain. They'll keep the local name, but when you call, you're getting the national company. Like exterminators, for example, so many of those have been purchased.
The exterminator business has gone through repeated what are called roll-ups, where locally owned exterminators have been purchased by private equity outfits many times, and they roll up hundreds or thousands of local providers into one of these roll-ups. So they keep all the local names, but they have no real connection at all anymore to the local provider. But in this case, we're talking about one-off kind of service visits.
Yeah.
And the best way to do so, this is something where social media has provided a really good outlet. Would you consider Nextdoor to be a form of social media?
It's a form of it. That's what I definitely use to find referrals.
Facebook, local Facebook groups, where you ask other people in your immediate area, hey, who do you recommend for a plumber? Who do you recommend for a locksmith? Who do you recommend for this, that, or the other? That way you're able to, just because they're local doesn't mean they're going to be great, but it dramatically improves what you're asking for, that you do get somebody local. But when you're like on Nextdoor and you have people saying, hey, I got to tell you, I used Jake as a plumber. He was the greatest I've ever had. And so you want Jake, right? So get away from Google. Doing a Google search for a local service provider is a recipe for disaster. And it's the kind of thing Google could clean up. They have made no effort in this area because obviously all they're chasing are the dollars. So coming straight ahead, speaking of dollars not making sense, how a lot of businesses treat their workers so badly.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Let's face it, sometimes multitasking can be overwhelming. Like when your favorite podcast is playing and the person next to you is talking and your car fan is blasting, all while you're trying to find the perfect parking spot. But then again, sometimes multitasking is easy. Like quoting with Progressive Insurance. They do the hard work of comparing rates so you can find a great rate that works for you, even if it's not with them. Give their nifty comparison tool a try, and you might just find getting the rate and coverage you deserve is easy. All you need to do is visit Progressive's website to get a quote with all the coverages you want, like comprehensive and collision coverage or personal injury protection. Then you'll see Progressive's direct rate, and their tool will provide options from other companies all lined up and ready to compare, so it's simple to choose the rate and coverages you like. Press play on comparing auto rates. Quote at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I love the free enterprise system. I love capitalism. And I believe that capitalism rewards those who run great businesses. And the core to running a great business is not necessarily the product or service a business offers, but especially with service businesses, it's how that business treats its employees. And in turn, that the focus is strictly on the customer. In good businesses, when you treat your employees well, they're motivated. They tend not to turn over as much. They understand the purpose and goal of serving that customer, and they do so. And I've talked in the past about the oddities involving Dollar General. And recently there was a Dollar General where people showed up to shop at it, and it had a sign on the door that all the employees had quit and the store was closed. Dollar General looks so bad. It's funny because I just talked a couple of months ago about all the issues involved with how Dollar General treats its workers allegedly like dirt. This is a thing. How you treat people matters. Dollar General had to bring in people from other stores to reopen that store. If you want to read about it, just use your search engine. You'll see some very colorful stories about it. Recently happened with the McDonald's franchise, where all the employees just quit at once and the McDonald's was closed. McDonald's are locally owned and operated. And I guess that local operator was not treating the employees well. I mean, it really does matter. And you know it. I know it. When you go to a business and you're greeted with a smile and you see the same people working there again and again, you know that's a place where the workers are appreciated and treated well. Business is hard, but we make it harder as a business owner on ourselves when we forget that we got nothing if we don't treat those employees well. Walmart, which used to have a horrible reputation in how it treated workers, has set up a school to treat its managers, thousands of them, how to serve the workers better. The managers serve the employees. And then in turn, how to provide better service to the customer. You're rolling your eyes because you went to Walmart and you got there and there were no registers open and the self-checkout was bad and all that. But it takes a while to turn around a big ship. I love what, Krista, you put in my notes. Classic Clark. Exclamation point. Because Krista and I have been together since 1997. How many times have you heard me, gosh, is that 27 years?
Uh-huh.
Why do you still so look young and I look so old? Anyway.
Please.
But you have always heard me talk about.
Oh, yeah. Romance your employees and they will romance. Yeah. It's very important.
I mean, it's what it is. So the idea is you want to make more money? Let's just get right to cold. You want to make more money as a business owner? It all starts with treating the employees who work for you with respect and all the rest. And if I had a dollar for every time I heard a business owner say, all through my life, oh, nobody wants to work anymore. Nobody cares anymore. Employees, blah, 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 blah. Okay, let me tell you, every generation has always thought the generation that came behind them was lazy and didn't care. It's just the way, I mean, you could probably go back and find that in Roman times.
Yeah.
People say, those young chariot builders just aren't any good. Know that
they are not carving that stone fast enough.
Exactly. So know that it's up to us as owners of businesses to motivate the people that work for us, to treat them with respect and to compensate fairly. Do those things, and pretty much everything else follows. Unless you're Kodak, and it goes from the film era to the digital era, and you don't adjust quick enough. I mean, you got to have the right product in the marketplace, but it really is in many ways so simple. Respect for each other.
All right, we'll go to some questions. Sam in Ohio says, I've not heard any discussion about municipal bonds recently. Are they a good investment to avoid federal taxes or not worth it?
So a bond, whether it's a traditional bond or a municipal bond or a U.S. Treasury bond, they are kind of a blend of an investment and a savings vehicle. There are times that bonds have been what's known as ballast. They've been a real good protector for you in times that your stock holdings have done really poorly. Well, we've been through a time period that bonds were really ugly. And that's because when interest rates were artificially suppressed by the Federal Reserve, and then interest rates started to rise, the value of bonds collapsed. And so they were an ugly way to save slash invest. Well, now, as interest rates have normalized, being in bonds has become a smart thing again. And I've had bonds as a portion of my portfolio all through the years. I wrote them up. I wrote them down through the manipulation of rates by the Federal Reserve. And now I'm recovering. It was a rough time in between. But having municipal bonds, particularly if you're in a higher income tax bracket, are a good part of a portfolio. And the value of bonds goes up and down with time. But I hold a lot of municipal bonds because I am in a higher tax bracket and I avoid federal tax on them, just like you're asking. And it is something that's recommended. Now, I don't buy individual bonds of any kind. I buy bond funds. And so if this is something you're interested in, know that the best source for bond funds, municipal, U.S. Treasury, or corporates, by far, it's not close, Vanguard. Vanguard dominates the bond space because being a co-op, the fees you pay for owning bond funds or bonds through their funds are much lower than they are elsewhere. And so Vanguard's bond portfolio of municipals, in your case, you should look at it and build a portfolio mixed of different maturities. The big four that Vanguard has: long-term municipals, intermediate-term municipals, short-term, and then they have something that's unusual. They have limited term, which are longer than short, shorter than intermediate, and usually a mixed portfolio works best as part of your bond side of your investing.
Joseph in Texas says, 2 years ago, I moved, canceled a credit card after a fraudulent charge, but had that card on file at a local gym. I forgot to change the card on file with the gym, so my account went into default.
Oh, no.
They sent it to collections. I paid the collection in full when the bill came. Is there any way to have this removed from my credit report? It killed my FICO score. I had a score of 802 when it all went down the tubes.
Joseph, a lot of things here. Let's go back a step. When the card was canceled because of the fraudulent charges, what I would say to you about that is that if this ever happens again, and it will with, it seems inevitable with all our credit cards that a fraudster gets hold of the number, have the issuer replace it with a new number. Don't cancel the card. Normally with automatics, the banks know what's going on. There's an automatic continuing draft or charge. They move it over to the new number automatically. So this would not have happened in most cases. If you did have a new card number issued and it happened, then this would be a normal area of dispute on your part, being hit with a collection on your report. But when something does go to collections for whatever reason, and you're in a position to pay the money, that is the point at which you negotiate. Say, here's the deal. This is what happened. I'm happy to pay you the money, but I need you to remove it from my credit report. And they say, oh, we don't do that. Say, okay, then I don't give you money. You use the money as your lever to get that item removed from your report. Because once you pay the money, you have no leverage. And that item stays there for 7 years. You're allowed to add a statement to your credit file, but I find that other than mortgage lenders, nobody reads it. So the initial hit on your credit from this one collection, from you having golden credit over 780, you were at 802, you probably dropped to around or below 700 as your credit score. And that stings a lot and hurts you. You're not going to have to wait a full 7 years for your score to come back. The collection has been paid, and each year your score should go up. 2 years out, it should already be recovering from that collection incident. But in the future, use any situation like this, the money they want, as the leverage you need to get that item cleared from your report, because after, time is the only healer.
All right. Now, Mark in Wisconsin has a tip for you. He says, I heard on a prior podcast, your Aura Ring battery is not holding a charge any longer. Before you buy a new one, contact Aura. My girlfriend and her sister had the same problem, and they both got new rings. Aura responded in hours to the email and sent it out the next day. Fantastic customer service.
And Aura is in. Thank you, Mark. My wife just did that.
Oh, wow.
Her Aura stopped holding a charge. She contacted customer service in Europe, where Aura is based. Same thing happened for her. They sent her, I don't know if it's a reconditioned or whatever, but she got a new one that holds charge just fine. And so that is a great suggestion for others. I'm having to charge my Aura ring constantly now because it's losing its ability to hold battery. And how many days do you go with your Aura before you need to charge it?
It's usually like 5 or 6, I think.
Yeah, I'm down to 1 or 2.
Yeah. Well, you need to take this advice.
I need to take Mark's advice and replace it. Aura, by the way, suddenly is facing a lot of new competition. There have been a lot of very positive reviews about the new fitness ring from Samsung that seems in a lot of ways a clone of the Aura. And so the marketplace is going to get much more competitive for having a health or fitness ring. And it's just so great because if you want to obsess about improving your sleep, which is one of the key things to improving your health, I've been able to significantly over the years, over the last 4 years, improve my sleep. I used to sleep terribly. And following Aura's continuous nagging, I have significantly increased the amount I sleep each night, and I'm really proud of that. Have you been able to improve yours at all yet?
It's definitely shown me how little I sleep, and my sleep has definitely gotten better. I've been really cognizant of, like, it warns you, like, you got to rest and relax now. So I've been getting better about it for sure.
You know, the Aura just sent something out saying that they found the number one factor that hurts people's sleep in the early hours of bedtime is
electronic devices.
Looking at your phone.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. Looking at your phone. They said, most people say, put your phone down. So the one time you shouldn't put your phone down, when you're looking for fantastic advice.
That's right.
And it's bedtime, but you're like, hey, I don't know how to do this. Just go to Clark.com.
Yeah, we're gonna, or I need you a deal. Clarkdeals.com. Yes.
We're going to help you out. So anyway, have a wonderful day. Remember what we're about. You learning ways to save more, spend less, and avoid getting ripped off.